Hello and welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. My name's Eric Mabbitt, and I am your host, bringing you part two of my conversation with Matt Bowling, the Executive Director of Flourish Coaching Ministry. And in this episode, we focus on embracing gospel ministry right now as an opportunity during the coronavirus pandemic. We also talk about the struggles of temporary ministry plans, of the opportunities to try new things, and examining our assumptions about ministry as churches. We discuss also the importance of being gracious, not only to yourself on an individual level, but on a leadership level, as we're trying to do things that we've never done before, and we're making lots of mistakes, and we're learning and growing. And we conclude this episode with Matt sharing the scripture text and theological truths that he's turning to for his own encouragement. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I had a lot of fun talking with my friend Matt. And so without further ado, we'll take you into the conversation. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's actually a good transition point to talk about because when you and I had talked before, you had mentioned or talked about a little bit about trying for the leadership of churches, trying to encourage the pastors and sessions that you guys are coaching to encourage them to embrace this time is a missional opportunity for yeah. gospel ministry. And so could you elaborate on that a bit?
Sure. So I think our temptation in a time like this, is to turn inward, right? It's to figure out, how do I get stabilized? How do we make sure that we get enough toilet paper and that I can maintain sanity with my kids at home and me working at home and my wife, maybe she works part-time or full-time. Now we're both working at home and the kids are here and we're just trying to figure out how to survive, right? And I think that there is a certain amount of time that it takes just to sort of adjust to a new reality, and I don't want to diminish that.
Yeah, I'll just testify because I am currently recording from my son's bedroom, and there's just like I had to shove to get my laptop on the desk. Like I had to shove the Legos and Pokemon cards and do like a dividing of the sea.
That's right,
like Moses.
That's
so
right.
So I could fit my laptop on here because this is the only room in the house where a lot of people don't go. I can't go in my bedroom because we have a 3-month-old baby who's sleeps in there on and off all day. I can't go downstairs because it's chaos because I got 5 other kids that are down there. And so I can't go in the girls' room because there's no desk in there. So this, you know, so I'm currently surrounded by children's things and adjusting to that as well. And it's very different than sitting in my nice quiet study at the church. So
yes, very different. I'm blessed to be sitting in the midst of my home office, which is, there's usually only 2 places that you'll find me, either in the gleaming silver tube in the sky or this place. So yeah. For us, it's not been so bad, but I know that for a lot of families, it's been a significant, continues to be a really significant struggle.
Well, and let me correct something though. It's not all bad. So there's been a lot more hugs and delightfulness, and it's been really cool as well. There are a lot of blessings to being at home because I go home and or I go downstairs to go refill my coffee, and it was like I went and helped my son with a math problem. I went and helped my other son find some specific Legos that he was trying to locate, and then I went back up feeling like, all right, that was kind of a cool break.
I'm an awesome dad.
So it was a lot of fun. So I mean, there's been some really great aspects of working from home, but there's also some challenges. So
for sure, to be sure. So I don't want to minimize that there's an adaption cycle to doing this, but I think also that there's a really great opportunity that we shouldn't miss. If you think back to how was it that you came to Christ? For most of us that didn't grow up in the church, and I didn't, neither did my wife. We both came to Christ in college. For most of us, it was in a time of some kind of emotional distress. God in his providence brought emotional distress into our life in some form or another to alert us to the fact that what we were believing was insufficient to enable us to handle life. And what what has God done on a mass scale? He has brought that kind of emotional distress upon the life of everybody. People, I was on the road exactly 1 month ago today. I returned from my last trip. No one could have guessed 1 month ago today that so many more people would be praying for the first time in their life. Sales of Bibles are up. And so people have been plunged in God's providence en masse into emotional distress. And so God has prepared many people around us to be reconsidering, wow, what if I were to die of this thing? Can my worldview handle my personal finances going to crap because I lost my job and there's no prospect for me to get it back for months? And so God has brought the heat, if you will, into the lives of many people. And there they are for us to love as our neighbors, to love in practical ways with prayer and grocery shopping. You're going to Target or grocery store or whatever to get stuff and just ask the elderly neighbor or the single person or whoever who's lonely from 6 feet away with your mask on. But, you know, what? There's just so many wonderful opportunities to love people and to demonstrate that Christians are not the jerks in the world. They're the people that love the hurting and the people have no one to care for them. And so I think that it's really, really a wonderful missionary opportunity for us to look out and to see, oh, maybe Jesus was right. Maybe the fields are white for the harvest. We just couldn't see it before. And here, if we have the eyes to see and the heart to turn outward, maybe that's there for us. Here's what's interesting. Everyone has one gift now that they never have. They have the gift of time. Everyone has time. There's no driving to work. There's no social engagements and sports. All there is people on their streets. And what if you treated your street like they were your family? How different would the world be if Christian families treated their streets like they were their own family?
Yeah, but how am I going to stream all my Netflix? I mean, I got seasons to binge.
Maybe just restrain yourself to one.
Well, sorry, no, I meant I have Ligonier series after Ligonier series to watch. I'm not binging Netflix or Amazon. Never, not doing that.
I would never do that. Oh, yeah. My wife and I mourned. We just finished a program, and like the next season doesn't come out till December. We were like, whoa. But little first world problems, right?
Yes.
Yes,
yeah, that's
first world problems.
So, embracing neighborhood. I think also I was just had on RUF minister and a friend of mine, and he was talking about how this is a great time for creativity, and just he was talking about just general creativity. He was talking about how he's taken up like writing amateur poetry and just kind of just doing some creative things that he normally didn't do, but just trying to do things out of the box. And so, but I think also ministry wise, this is very creative. And he's, as an RUF minister, they did group cooking through Zoom. So everyone bought their ingredients. And so they were cooking. So these single college students are, you know, but they were hooking up and like, and so they're sharing this community event as they're cooking, but they're sharing it with their friends. And so it's just, or they, you know, playing games online with people and stuff. But, you know, and just maybe, you know, I've thought about, you know, it's like, you know, you know, I've thought about things, you know, just to do about what if we did, you know, a driveway dinners and where we just invite our neighbors to go like picnic out in your front yard and we'll all just do it at the same time. We'll all just wave at each other, you know, or something just that we can, see other people, connect with them. You know, I've long wanted to build a picnic table right in my front yard and just go out there, you know? And so, and I'm determined it's going to happen one day. I have the plans already. I just got to do it. But yeah, I think it's encouraged us an opportunity to be creative in ministry, and we really have to think outside the box. So
for sure.
And we're hitting this moment because this Sunday is Easter. There's a lot of lot of the Seder meals. I actually wanted to start this podcast by asking you, how is this podcast different than all other podcasts?
That would have been great.
Yeah. So, a nod to the Jewish listeners. So
that's right.
But this time where, you know, like many pastors, we were scrambling to figure out what our ministry plans were, how we're going to alternate that. But now as that begins to settle and we develop into a new routine, even a temporary routine, we still need to almost go back and almost that, you know, it's been around for 5 minutes. It needs renewal. So it kind of need to go back and go, okay, well, we started doing these five things. Maybe we need to drop off one of those because it's not really that effective. And we need to start up this new thing because we still have these limited resources. And just actually talk with we're about to start something new to assist our church members with their Sunday morning worship. And our music director called me up and was like, "Hey, I got this idea." And I was like, "Sweet, let's try it out." You know, so it's just this this opportunity to do simple but new creative things, and just thinking we wouldn't normally do this stuff, you know, normally. So what can we do? What are the opportunities for? And so there is it's a way of thinking. We're not happy about the circumstances, but it's a type of thinking that is very exciting to be able to kind of come at ministry with a fresh angle and say, okay, what can we do? What resources do we have? What could we accomplish? Because a lot of churches, they stop asking those questions of what could we do? Who could we reach? They just focus on who they already have in their midst. And we have to do both right now. Yes. We have to care for those who belong to the church, and then at the same time, caring for them, but also, how can we care for those outside the church?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things is that when all your givens are taken away, you realize that maybe they don't have to be givens. Maybe it could be different, right? Maybe, you know, a small group that began to pray for, you know, the unbeliever next door, they'd never done that before, but maybe they'll keep doing that because they, even when they can gather physically again, because God gave them a different heart for it, right? I think that for me, one of the things about the shutdown that's been interesting is that I never have enough time to write or space. Well, I have the gift of time too, because I can't fly, can't go visit clients. I can't go meet people from other denominations, right? You know, I don't have any of that. But what I have is I have time and I have space now to write. And that's good. That's good for our ministry. It's good overall, Lord willing, for our clients, right? So figuring out what's the new opportunity that's there that we wouldn't have even considered unless we were placed in this circumstance? What is it? And how could the Lord use that for his glory and for our joy in the midst of it? I like your RF Campus Minister's idea. You know, it's just neat to have the opportunity for creativity and to take it. And then I think that it will take some discipline, assuming we do get to go back to some semblance of what was normal before, at least, you know, over the summer and into the early fall, maybe, Lord willing. You know, the temptation will be just to go back to the way that things always were. And I think that one of the things we'll have to resist is, well, do we have to? Is it required? One of the big things that we work with in churches and that I need to undergo renewal is that times like this help them question their assumptions. And not everything has to be restarted. Jesus is less animated about many of the things that are that we're passionate about. He's less animated about them than we are.
Can I give an example?
Please.
So my favorite example is Sunday school.
Yeah.
So because Sunday school is not divinely mandated. So and so that's one thing I remind our church every year is we don't have to do Sunday school. And they've heard me say it enough that they know I'm not advocating for the banishment, the abolishing of Sunday school. But it's just a reminder that we don't have to do it. And if we're going to pay all this money for curriculum, if we're going to take up all this time for our from our volunteers to teach it, we're going to take up all this space to do it. We're going to ask families to get up an extra hour early to get to the church yep. early to do this. I mean, just all of those things, then we better have a purpose in mind in doing it. And not, and the answer can't just be just because we always did it. It's so it's got to be serving a purpose. And so that helped us calibrate to the, you know, our, and to go back and say, okay, why do we do Sunday school? Well, we realize Sunday school is a tool that we're deciding to use for a discipleship tool. And for right. children, it is a discipleship tool that assists the parents in discipling their own children. And for adults, it is a discipleship aid to give them more, you know, biblical knowledge. And so, but just to try to communicate that, and granted, it's easier to write that down on a position paper than it is sure. to actually, you know, get that into the hearts and minds of folks, especially people who have kind of just gone gone and done the same thing day, you know, week in, week out. But right. But the thing is, I mean, we all, every church, no matter what, whether this is an, like an older traditional church, as we think of with a steeple and all that, or the new contemporary box with a rock band church, you know, like even those, like every church is a traditional church because they all have traditions, they all have liturgies, they all have their things, and they all have their, like you said, they all have their assumptions.
Yep.
And so
yep.
it's a time to go back and to look at our assumptions. What do we assume is necessary and required for faithful ministry for the gospel?
And to regain that freedom to re-choose. I had occasion this week to review some material from the early years of us being in Seattle and the church renewal that we were blessed to be a part of here. And one of the earliest things that we changed was we stopped doing a traditional VBS, which is, I know all of your listeners have now turned us off because that's heresy, I realize. Yeah. But
how dare you?
Yeah, I know it. So one of the choices we made was that we stopped doing a traditional VBS. And one of the reasons was that it did not bear the fruit that we were seeking for it. And people were like, but we were able to preach the gospel to children for so many years. And we were like, yeah, that's good. That's not, we're not saying that that's bad. It's just that we're not seeing that Jesus is enabling us to fulfill the Great Commission by a traditional VBS. We are not seeing disciples made through our VBS. Neither children nor adults do we get to see disciples made through our traditional VBS. Now, maybe there's some churches where that is still happening, but it wasn't happening in Seattle in 2010. And so we stopped it because we felt the freedom to stop it. Now, here's the reason that a lot of times people hold on to things. It makes them feel like they're being good Christians. We came to realize that our people, the way that they thought about Christianity was more like, we came to call it checkbox Christianity. I go to church regularly, check. I give to the church in some of my money, check. I'm involved in some kind of small group or Sunday school class, something like that, check. And I serve in some way in the church, check. So those four, somebody had told them, if you tick off those four check boxes, you're a good Christian. And so my being participating in pulling off VBS each year was part of me being a good Christian. And that made me feel satisfied that I was doing what God called me to. And so we began to recognize those people, and we were like, those things are good things, but really what Jesus calls you to is a whole life of following him, of walking as a, like the way that a missionary would in a foreign country, but you walk that way here. The only difference between you and a missionary is the place that you do the work. But you're that kind of person pursuing those kinds of ends. It just happens to be in this place instead of in some other place. That was a big switch for our people to realize, oh, Christianity is a calling. Everybody's a missionary in that small M sense in Christianity. And that was a big difference for our people compared to checkbox Christianity.
So is there, and you've spoken to it a bit. So I just wanted to see if is there anything else that you would, you know, want to say to churches that are struggling to figure out how to minister right now, either in terms of encouragement or wisdom or guidance to pastors or churches, that you would want people to really just, you know, if they've learned nothing else, you know, yeah. what do they need to hear?
Yeah. I think one is just to be gracious with yourself. Most churches were not technologically ready for this. And so you can live under a lot of insecurity and anxiety. We're going to lose people because our experience of what we can pull off is not as good as, you know, the church down the street or whatever. And so I think that one thing is just to be a caution that, man, if you're, Jesus sees the effort that you're putting in and he's pleased with you seeking to honor him and bless your people and just live in the joy of that. So that would be one thing, I think. The other is that this really forces us to a greater degree of intentionality than most of us as pastors tend to live week by week. Here's what I mean by that. When I was pastoring a local church, when I would go to our Sunday morning worship, it was intelligence gathering, right? I could see that Fred was downcast or that Fred wasn't there. I could see that Mary was tearful, or Wendy would come up to me and she would say, you know, Mary's not really doing so well. So there was a whole bunch of intelligence gathering that would happen by us being present together on Sunday morning. We have none of that now. We don't have any ability to do any intelligence gathering because we can't be physically in the same place. Well, how do we still keep tabs on people? We have to become a whole lot more intentional than we used to have to be. And I think that increase in intentionality about the meeting with our small group leaders to make sure that they're clear on what we're doing for content and that they're ministering to our people, making sure that we have all the people in our church on a list. And so we can know, did somebody get a call this week? And so we've got a spreadsheet of the people in our church and who last called them and what's the update on them and how can we pray for them? It just makes all of us push our intentionality game a lot to a lot higher level. I think that's a good thing. Yeah. I tended to rest on my vine working. And we just don't have a lot of that. We just don't have a lot of that in-person intel gathering. And so we're pushed to a greater degree of intentionality. I think that's good for us, actually, to be pushed in that way. And so I just want to encourage you to lean into that now, and then don't let up on it. What would be bad about every person in your church, even after things come back? What would be bad about them receiving a text every week from whatever shepherd is closest to them, yeah. from receiving a phone call from somebody or an email or a text from an elder or an officer or a small group leader every week or every other week? What would be bad about that?
I think that point about that intentionality in that shift, that realizing that it's not, especially because smaller churches are, like you were saying, like they're so highly relational,
right?
That stuff just happens by default because you're there together, and then all of a sudden it's this, you know, and of course, I mean, you know, it's not surprising. I talk to people in our church, they're like, man, I miss everybody, and you miss the sense of community, and you miss those things, the body language, seeing somebody, and you miss hearing from them, and so like I know we had to adjust our prayer list because normally we have that time of sharing a prayer request right before the service and in the fellowship hall. And that's when everybody explains what's behind the names that are on the prayer list. And, right. But then I put out a digital prayer list, but then I realized I was just adding names and nobody knew what it was about. So I had to add a new section. Yeah. Yes. I had to add a new section called new prayer requests where I detail out what those are. And then in the following prayer list, those names move down into the prayer list and the new requests come in. And so like just but those are those adjustments we have to make. And I like the way you put it, 'cause it's not big dummy. Why didn't you know to do that at the start. You should have known to do that. I mean, because that's the kind of attitude we can get, because, oh, you should have done that because that was the right way to do it. It's like, well, yeah, I didn't know that at the time.
Right, exactly.
And so one of our elders, one of his kind of mantras, and I love it, is he says, look, you know, if you're not, you will make no mistakes if you're not doing anything.
Yeah, so, that's a great line.
You know, it's just, if you ain't doing nothing, you're not going to make a mistake, you know, but if you're going to do something, you're going to make a mistake. So like but that's how we grow and we make things better and we improve them. And I think that idea of like not beating ourselves up over it, but also saying, okay, but this does need to change. We do need to make this better. We do need to change this, or we need to become actively intentional and very much, which means we have to do things we're not used to doing. Like, okay, well, that means I need to actually schedule time in each day to make those phone calls, send those text messages. I got to write it down because it's not naturally going to happen. And I'm not naturally just going to bump into people on Sunday. Cause if I do, I'll get fined. If you intentionally bump into people nowadays, I mean, it's
a problem.
Yeah. So, well,
I think the other thing is that helps us out. One more thing about the prayer list, because there was another context with a church planter that I'm working with right now, church replanter actually, where he was trying to help longstanding people in the church who knew who Susie was and what her malady was. And so Susie was a name on the list that meant something to people who'd been in the church for a long time, but new people coming in had no idea who Susie was. And so part of what this does is it helps us realize that the experience of the church to somebody who's new is very different than the experience of the church to somebody who's been there for a long time. And some of this pushes us to realize, man, there's a lot to helping somebody who's new to the church, like get up to speed. Mm-hmm. What can we do to help them, help new people feel like they can get up to speed and they don't have to have all this institutional knowledge to be in on the inside, but we have ways that we can include them. So for example, like that prayer list, if it was an online prayer list, say it's a, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, maybe it's a Google spreadsheet, right? And it's a name on the list, but it has a note. And you can click on the note. And you can get the skinny on that prayer item. And so you can get the institutional knowledge because the church thought about, hey, Sally, if you're brand new, we all know Sally, but you don't because you're brand new. But we'll make it possible for you to know who that is so you can participate with us when we pray for Sally. And that's just a way, again, the intentionality pushes us to go, well, what's the experience? If you had nothing, how could you experience our church well? We've all had to recreate that, right?
Yep.
But it should push us, even when we get back to our buildings and our normal processes, well, what's the way that people could experience our church well? And have we thought about that? That's a good thing in my book.
Yeah. No, that is really good. So, well, the last thing I wanted to get into is to ask you what texts, what theological truths are, and I'm asking this of everybody I talk to right now, because I really think it's interesting to hear from different people what their answer to this question, which is what texts and theological truths are you turning to strengthen your hope during this time where, you know, it's, you know, things are rough and tough for a lot of people.
Sure. I think one is Psalm 42. Why are you downcast, O my soul? I have a hard time even just admitting to myself I'm downcast. I probably went, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks of this before I could admit to myself that I was depressed. And I'm not a highly adaptable person. I like my routines. I usually have my travel schedule.
You're a Christian.
Yeah, I know.
You're a pastor.
I know. It's terrible. And a coach too. Imagine.
Oh,
right?
For shame. For shame.
I know it. He's going to cut off the podcast right now.
Yeah.
I really have to ask that to myself sometimes and go, why are you sleeping so much? Or why are you not very productive? Or what's going on where you're snappy or where you can't seem to get out of the doldrums? And it's kind of like, oh, duh, you're depressed. well, why are you downcast, O my soul? And it, what I like about that text is it's freeing. It says that I've got permission to ask that question, and that it doesn't violate God's sense of, you know, good order or even good discipleship to have to ask that question.
Well, and also just to add to that, it's so important that God had it written down to be put to song.
Yeah.
He says, I want you to sing this. Like, how weird is that? We're like, no, you can't sing that. You can only sing happy clappy, right? And it's like, well, no, I'm going to sing, you know, it's like
that. I'm depressed. And yeah, I don't know why. Yeah. Right?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like some people when they hear like the hymn Stricken, Smitten, and Afflicted, right, they're like, man, that's a kind of a down hymn, you know, that's really, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's about the crucifixion. It's about the death of Christ. It's somber. It is kind of
the minor dark key for a reason. Yeah.
And that's a minor key song, right?
Right.
It's a minor key psalm. In that it's, yeah, and it's just like, that's what we need in that moment to be able to, like you said, that's where you start preaching to yourself, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
I will yet again praise him.
Absolutely. Because you let yourself make your way all the way through the psalm, right? You let yourself, Paul Miller's been so good with this, with the whole J-curve stuff. You let yourself go down so that you could experience the resurrection back up, right?
You go all the way to Psalm 43. That's it. You go from Psalm 42 all the way to Psalm 43, all the way.
All the way. So I think that, so that's one place that just, you know, and as guys, we're, you know, we tend to skip over emotions. We tend to just jump to the next thing that needs to be done. We want to be seen as competent, and we got it together. And it's like, you know what? It's okay not to be together. And that reassures me. It's okay to not be together. I think I Eric knows this, but your listeners are not. But I've had my fair dose over the last 8 years of some pretty significant physical maladies. And one of the things that physical suffering does for you is it makes you much more willing to pray, come Lord Jesus, come quickly. It really does. It gives you a hunger for all of this to be done. You know, the promise of the new heavens and the new earth and the being without sorrow and difficulty, those are much more real to me than they would have been a decade ago. And this kind of experience heightens that. Sure, would I like to see my kids married and kids of their own, experience grandkids and write books and keep coaching pastors? And, you know, of course, I'd love to do all of those things. That's what I pray for. I think it's what God's called me to, right? But I would rather... Paul says essentially, it's better to be dead. And that seems very striking to us as Americans who are very experiential, and we're looking forward to finishing our bucket lists and having this long series of experiences and this wealthy, comfortable retirement. And, you know, and Paul basically says, yeah, it's better to be dead.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to be here, I mean, that's essentially, you know, the first part of, I mean, it's fascinating. Well, that's the first part of Philippians 4, right?
It's very Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
It's because of the evil in the world, it's better to be dead and be with the Lord. But like you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it starts off before it's like, well, it's better to be dead. But if I'm going to be here, then let's do it. Beginning of, I'm sorry, 2 Corinthians 5. It's better to be dead. But if I'm going to be here, well, I guess it ought to be about the kingdom. And then you go to Philippians 4, right?
Yeah, and Philippians 4.
You know, yeah. And you're going to. You know, you're going to bring your anxieties to the Lord. And there, of course, there's plenty to have. People in my organization, they rely on our organization keeping going for their sustenance. This is how my family makes money, right? You know, and so it's real. But here we're invited by the Lord to put our, you know, to cast our anxieties on him.
Well, and so
that's true.
I wanted to illustrate that too. In my own ministry, so when my first year of ministry, I found myself in assisted living facility visiting a member who was in her 80s, who had just lost her son, who was in his 60s, to brain cancer.
Oh.
And so I'm 30, and I'm sitting there with my Bible, you know, a shiny, newly minted pastor, fresh off the mill, you know, and I'm just like, you know, and I just had to tell her, look, I don't have any personal wisdom for you, because what could I tell you? All I have today to offer you is the hope of the gospel. And she said, that is the only thing that's holding me together. It is holding her together. And so I think that's an important aspect of just, you know, as bad as things are, whether it's sickness or economic problems that are just really starting for us now, you know,
right.
You know, Jesus is enough. And we certainly need to gather around as and figure out ways how to minister to people in tangible ways that are going to be effective and helpful to them. But we also don't need to act as if there is no resurrection, or as if there is no hope. So, well, all right. Yeah,
for sure.
So I think that's going to wrap it up. But I do want to ask you before we close out, you have a podcast.
I do. Yeah, so, I'm glad you asked me.
So why don't you plug your podcast and also your website, where people can go for more information.
Sure. So we're just flourishcoaching.org on Facebook. You can find us at facebook.com/flourishcoaching1. And we have a podcast that you can get to off our website called the Church Renewal Podcast. We do it weekly, at least weekly. Some of those are with me talking about renewal themes. Some of those are interviews or stories of pastors that are seeing renewal in their midst. You can connect on our Facebook page. We do a weekly live stream. And so we actually just did one same day that we're recording this. We did one earlier today on anxiety and COVID. And so if people want to see that, the recording of it is already been posted up there, facebook.com/flourishcoaching1. And people can make use of that.
Excellent. Well,
thank you for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun. Thanks for doing it. So, well, with that, we're going to wrap this up. So, I'm going to go ahead and say bye to Matt. And Matt, thanks for coming on, and I'll talk to you later.
My pleasure. Sounds good. Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. Well, that is going to conclude my conversation with Matt Bowling. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you want to get in touch with me to suggest a topic or to give a comment or ask a question, you can connect with me at eric@baileychurch.com. That's eric@baileychurch.com. So for the Rookie Pastor, I'm Eric Mabbitt. And remember, just one step at a time.